The Hard Yards on Sports Joe. Brought to you by Innocent Super Smoothies. On the bright side.
To the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antoine Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ring Rose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
Welcome along to the Hard Yards, episode 65. I'm Andy McGeady. I have James Downey and Kev McLaughlin in studio with me. Hello.
Morning.
Andy.
We've no Pat McCarry in studio today, but he was at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, so we'll be hearing him speaking with Jonathan Sexton and a few others a little later on. Before we start, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud and all good podcast apps to get the show straight to your phone. Gents, there's some good rugby played over the weekend. We were talking about match preparation, Baba style.
I'll take that one then.
Yeah,
very interesting contrast of match prep, isn't there? When you see a theme, two training sessions, a fancy dress, a few beers,
points on England.
460.
Yeah,
like against an Eddie Jones tight regime. So yeah, it's amazing the way just a different sides of the coin and how it is when players are actually kind of constricted to how they're playing and the shackles are off and you can just play the game for enjoyment, which is why you play the game. And look at they've got some unbelievable players and line breakers there, but Jesus, they made them look at a very, very average.
Incredible talent on the Baba side though.
Yeah,
when you throw those guys into the mix, it doesn't matter if they've been on the piss all week; like they can still,
It's a refreshing to see that rugby can still throw up something like that.
It's good, yeah. Like England will be fired up; they really won't have enjoyed that at all.
Yeah,
because at the end of the day, they're building into a tour, three tests against South Africa, and they would have had optimal preparation that week.
Third loss in a row as well.
Third loss in a row. They would have known exactly who was playing that weekend. You know, because they're leaving out the Exeter and the Saris guys. Mm. So the same group would have been training all week. They would have done proper preparation, lineouts organised, everything. The Babas probably threw their lineouts together on Friday. That's kind of what you're talking about. And that's good for the game. It's just not good for England.
No, that's all right. Well, that can be good for the game too.
Exactly.
Scarlets came to town on Saturday. Scarlets hadn't been too happy with their preparation. Fairly vocal about their opinion of artificial pitches. Have you played on... Jimmy, you've played on artificial.
Yeah, yeah. No, there was kind of at the time when they were kind of coming into fashion, there used to be a lot of kind of player feedback on them about how it impacted your body. Like, this is after Premiership matches now in the UK. And for me personally, not a fan, but that was because I used to have back issues and I think, I don't know, on the hard surface, this kind of wasn't conducive. But I guess you look at the kind of... You look at how it works in Ireland and you look at the kind of lengths they're set up and all the schools players, every school now has got a 3G, 4G pitch. So they're getting used to it. I think it's maybe what you're used to as well, but it does burn. Clontarf has one as well now. They have a 4G. It does burn. Like if you slide down there, it's like you do burn. I think that's what the Scarlets players were talking about. Mm. If you looked at their legs at the weekend, a lot of them had the kind of those cuts and did a horrible cuts that... When they do, like they're still moist and they stick to your sheets or they stick to your clothes and it's actually horrible.
And that was a quote which is interesting. If someone hasn't had one of those before, it's the way that they weep at night is actually really annoying. When I think it might have been Johnny McNichol saying, you know, waking up multiple times, you're sticking to the sheets. I hear him on that. It's really, really annoying. And when you're trying to prepare for a big game, Kev, it actually isn't ideal. I know there was a lot of joking about it, but it's not ideal.
I just cannot believe that they spent a week talking about that. If I was Wayne Pivac, I would have been absolutely furious.
With the players?
They're playing a final and they're talking about grazes on their legs.
Yeah.
If they're annoyed and if they have issues with it, go directly to Glasgow, keep it quiet, don't go to the media about it. Like the Leinster lads are looking at that and going, Jesus, like where are these lads' heads at?
Is that the best
excuse
you have?
There's no way Esau or Johnny would allow any of the players mention a graze on their leg and lead up to a final. There's other things to be thinking about. Like that's it's a distraction. And the very fact that they're mentioning in the media means they're thinking more about that than they are about how are we going to beat the best team in Europe this weekend. I actually could not believe it. And when I began reading, I was like, Leinster have this game.
Yeah. That's what I thought too. Draw a line under it straight away. Like, that game's over. Yeah, Who cares?
You need
like
the leaders, in your team to step up and go, lads, that was tough. Our legs are all sore. We're all in the same boat. Let's forget about it and move on. We'll think about it after we lift the fucking trophy at the weekend. That's the way your head's at.
It's the same as if you had a brutal referee and you just go, oh, the referee, oh, even though he'd won, it's like, park it, draw a line under it, move on. New game, new week.
So in terms of that prep, that was the second big knockout meeting between Leinster and Scarlets in a month or so.
Yeah.
What differences did you see in the way that either Leinster or Scarlets approached that game? Because in fairness, Leinster's performance in that Champions Cup semi-final was one of the great performances of the season. They steamrolled Scarlets, and Scarlets would have been looking at that hellbent for revenge. Did they manage, scoreline aside, what did you see in the approach?
From my perspective, I saw just the breakdown. I thought they targeted the breakdown a hell of a lot more. I think from the first game, Leinster just got such quick ball, and you can't let them get that quick ball. I think they fatigued then later on in the game to actually putting those numbers in. You could see Tadhg Byrne was getting involved, James Davies, Shingler when he was on. It was like they were getting him as much as they could to try and slow that ball down. But Leinster were just, a couple of times I thought as well, maybe Berry could have given a few pens, but there's a couple of close calls. But just to get that defence organised, if you can't get your defence line organised, you're going to struggle against a quality side like Leinster, as they showed.
Yeah, like Barry was a good referee for Leinster. He likes to favour the attacking team, and you're right, there was two or three times in the first half where I said that could have been a pen against Leinster, but he just let it play. But like, I actually saw very little difference between the semi-final and that game. Like, Leinster were steamrolled them again. The game was over really at half time for all intents and purposes, and they finished it off then in the first 10 or 15. They were so clinical in the first 10 minutes of the second half. And they're just so ruthlessly exposed the weaknesses that the Scarlets have. And I think Scarlets would have looked at the way Racing slowed Leinster's ball down, got line speed, got in their face, but it's very hard to do that on a dry day. I maintain that if it's a dry day in Bilbao, Leinster beat Racing by 20 or 30 points. I think the only reason, and I was chatting to a couple of the Leinster lads after the game, and they said it was very frustrating. They could see holes everywhere, but they just couldn't expose them because it was so wet, it was so hard to play. And I just think Leinster's power game allied with an ability to expose weaknesses and find space is just, it's really, really hard to compete against, and Scarlets didn't really have any answer to it. But it's just so impressive, like, that the way they approach the game, and I'm talking about Scarlets' mental weakness is essentially what I would have seen it as, the way they focused on grazes on their knees. Like, the ability for Leinster to stay grounded and for their leadership figures to stand up and make sure that everyone kept their feet in the ground, everyone realised that they hadn't done anything yet, and if they didn't win the final against the Scarlets, they would have actually considered the season a failure. That's where they were at. And again, I was chatting to some of the lads during the week, and they were so nervous. They were like, I know we've won Europe, like, but this is what it means to us. We've never done this before.
I think it's also fear as well, I think. Do you know, like, who wants to, winning something the week before and then losing in the last week would be an, as you say, but just that come down and that mental attitude you'd have, it'd be horrendous. You'd feel so bad, wouldn't you? Like, even though, and if it's a flip side, you might feel a little bit better that you'd lost the final the week previous than if you'd won it. Like, but to win the double, like, it's like, what an achievement from them, you know? And like you look across the board and all the different players that stood up for me. Like, I thought Devin Toner had an unbelievable game. Like, you know, and everyone's talking about James Ryan, and Dev pulls out a performance like he did at the weekend. And even, I'm sure, Issa would have been kind of looked after during the week. And I'm sure Lachlan was in there quite early for a lot of the team run. I don't know, I'm just presuming.
Well, we talked about that point last week, because Leo Cullen said after the semi-final, against Munster, that he'd picked Issa to play a half. They said he wasn't going to get beyond 40 minutes. It was a gamble, one he was happy taking. And sure enough, in the final, he goes off after, what, 18, 19
How
minutes.
How good was Locko, though? Like?
Yeah.
So delighted for him. And, you know, it says a lot about Issa. He spent half his press conference talking about how good he was, talking about how good Locko was when he came on for him. And, like, that, I think that's sort of the measure of the culture in Leinster as well, is that your leader is talking about other people most of the time, trying to get other people to lift the trophies. And
there was a lot of talk after the game, and it's amazing when you're listening to the post-match interviews, number 55 came up in almost every interview by every player and coach to talk about 55 players used during the season. Now, that's a huge number. Yeah. And it's great that Leinster have the capacity to carry that many players at a professional level. But yeah, that seems to have been a theme running into the game for them.
Yeah, it was. And they needed it because the ability, I think, honestly, the only way they could win that semi-final against Munster was by freshening things up. Yeah. I think if they'd gone with the same 15 or as close to the same 15 as was physically possible, I actually think they would have lost. And that's not because the quality of players is any different or the quality of players goes down. It's because that they needed to freshen things up. And guys like Jack Cohn and Rory O'Loughlin just brought this freshness to things and this hunger. Having sat on the bench in Bilbao and watched from the stands or whatever, you know, this intensity that they brought, I think it energised the whole team.
And James Lowe as well, the last two games.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was very hard for him sitting in the stands with Bilbao, I'd say.
And it's out of his hands, a lot of it then, isn't like it's just the circumstances of... Yeah. Okay, Luke's injured, so we're gonna kind of have to like drag you along here a little bit. But again, it's even if they had a scrape by that Munster game, they would have had a knock on effect somewhere, be it in the final, be it on at the weekend, just gone. Like, you know, it's just to play those so many intense games in a row, like at this time of the year. Like, and look, okay, we know that players aren't going to be training much. It's just they all know what their jobs at this stage of the year. Jeez, you like to think so. But like, you know, but they did, like, and they did exactly what they were supposed to do. But like, that squad depth is just, I know we've spoken about it before, we've harped on about it a lot, but like, it's unbelievable, the depth. Like, and but the quality, you lose, look, even Kev's mentioned O'Loughlin, you lose Issa and it's like so early in the game. And if you think of if Scarlett had lost Scott Williams or something that early, that's going to be a huge blow for them. Or Lee Havin, that's going to be huge. It's like, yeah, grand, yeah, Rory's in, he knows his job. He looked like he'd trained all, like, it's not as if he was like, oh, I'm into 12, I haven't trained. He looked like he was in that position. He'd done it the week previous. And
he is out of position, though. He's not a 12.
No, he's not.
He's actually a winger,
which
really
makes it, and against it more a partnership of Hadley Parks and Scott Williams, who have been prolific, both of them, and the defensive nous that they both have are like top notch. They're top centres to play against, like, you know, and to come in and like get in gain line, he was running great lines and everything he was doing, like, he had the energy about him, you know, and that youthful exuberance that we speak about.
Yeah, it's annoying, the young.
but leaving the youth aside, like, sorry, I just have to say, talk a little bit about Sexto and how good he is. And you talk about a team like Scarlett coming in to the Aviva, like, they're going to have some doubts playing against the champions of Europe. And Johnny is just so good at making teams doubt themselves, making Lee Halfpenny drop the ball, putting up three or four bombs on Steph Evans, like some of their best players, and the way he executes that game plan. And I love the way, after taking that shot that, you know, he thought was high and was questionable enough, that the penalty was given. You know, I know there's a lot of differing opinions on it, and he's mouthing off then as Scott Williams is running back. You can see he's absolutely fired up. And it made me think about, do you remember Felipe? It used to always happen to Felipe, he'd get fired up in certain games and he'd bomb it. Like, he wouldn't be able to perform. When Johnny gets fired up with that, he plays better.
Yeah,
he has this ability to be absolutely fired up and like unbelievably physical, but like icy in his execution. Okay, so it's pretty incredible.
Pause that for a second, because we have some tape of Pat McCarrie talking to Johnny after the game.
Just saying, again, you know, you're always going to be that guy. People are coming after you in games and stuff as well. Scott Williams had the target on you there for the whole thing, but a lot of it was kind of, it was borderline, but it's fair enough again. Would you kind of seen it the same way yourself? There was a bit of talk when you're out there on the pitch.
I'm not sure. Again, look, leave those decisions up to other people. You just got to get on with the game. Look, it does, you know, get on top of me at times. Something that I probably need to, I always keep saying it, get better at. But like I said, you just got to move on. I don't worry about it after games.
Well, it was the way you actually kind of moved on quickly enough during, after all that kind of the treatment and stuff and the talk, took that kick right to the corner as well, and then Sean Cronin getting over as well. But is there anything you probably enjoyed more than the aftermath of that try being scored and then nailing that conversion as well?
Yeah, I obviously went for the corner. You know, I got a little bit lucky because the breeze was, it wasn't a hard breeze, but it was moving the ball at times. You could see a couple of my kicks, I didn't quite strike them right, and the wind actually held me with a couple of them. But you know, the wind nearly kept that one in off the corner, but thankfully it touched the line and we managed to score from it.
That was interesting, that little chat. And to go back to what you were saying, Kev, Sexton can play well when he's angry, when he's wound up. That is not the same for every player. In fact, it can be very dangerous for some players.
There's very few players, actually, that have it, I think.
Yeah.
The majority of players, like, they get fired up like that, they get upset, the adrenaline starts pumping through the body, and he ends up like booting into the stands and whatever, or skewing the kick off his foot. But like,
yeah,
to execute like that, and then, you know, the soft hands for the try then on top of that, it's just,
oh, that was
that was gorgeous.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was blinking, you'll miss it, but so much went on in that James Lowe try.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
But even you saw him speaking beforehand to Luke McGrath. Jeez, my God. And he was like having the chat going, when I want it, like, give it to me when I call for it. Yeah. Like, you know. Yeah. And he came around early, and just the no-look pass just kills Johnny McNichol. It's just that doubt that he has in his mind. And because if he steps, holds that extra, all he needs is a second, Johnny, and he has that, he can make that tackle.
But there was something Sky Sports...
Johnny runs so much, and he kind of turns, steps in, and he's done.
Yeah, there was something Sky Sports kept talking about, is that he inside shoulder, like, could you just explain what he did there? That was subtle, but
yeah, you have to, when you're coming around the corner. Okay, he was stood there. If you run hard on the inside, you've got the doubt of that person on your inside. You've got to trust them wholeheartedly that they're going to make that tackle. Johnny obviously had a little bit of doubt, so close to the line that he said, Johnny's also running that hard, will he be able to pass? So he's going to step in to say, I'm going to stop him. But as Johnny runs that hard, he's got to respect him. And Johnny's just able to, just, he doesn't even, like, just no look pass, straight across the body. And there's no defending that. Like,
oh, so hard.
It's so hard to defend. Like,
and the other thing is, Johnny is probably the one player in the world that could actually, if McNichol had turned out, he actually just would have shouted and gone.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He has that ability to, like you say, he plays heads up. So he wasn't looking at low outside of me, he was looking at McNichol.
And the second he turns, I would have made up my mind before. I probably wouldn't have had the kind of spatial awareness or the peripheral vision to kind of see who was stepping in. But he was able to do it and just kind of run. Just looks for, once he's looking like that, Johnny's looking at him, and me as a defender, I'd certainly step in and go, right, he's going for this line. Like, you know, of course he's going to try and use his momentum. Yeah.
What players have you played with who were able to do that? To get themselves up to that level, whether it's, you know, being sort of antagonised, for want of a better word, by an opponent, or actually psyching themselves up. What players have you played with that play better like that?
Not many. Heinze used to be good at, but he used to more just fire everyone else up. Just go around like niggling everyone, but like he just played with a smile on his face and he loved it.
I'm trying to think if Rog wasn't bad at kind of winding people up and himself getting wound up too, but he was surrounded by a nice...
But he
nice
was ice
army
cool
of
then, like, yeah. Wasn't he?
But like people, obviously, he's another kind of Sexton where everyone's targeting him.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what they're trying to do to Rog, you know, and just kind of rile him and put him off his game. You're trying to put the key players off their game, and by whatever means, whatever percent that's going to be. But if they're that cool, they're that quality, and they're quality for a reason that they just focused.
So one moment from this game that I was really, really happy I was on the ground to see was Jordan Armour's try. That's one thing. The replays
of your tweet gave it away.
Yeah, a little bit. I was sweet, wonder of God. I was going. I'm so glad I wasn't in the press box for that. But the speed that he was running at to execute that piece of skill, I thought it was absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, I thought it was just a nutting kick initially from Scott Williams, put it across, and then Larmer got it and kicked, and I was actually thinking, where's Halfpenny? But when you've got wheels like Larmer, like, he just head up the ground, and then I saw a back rower beside him, and then actually I was going to go, what's he going to do now? Is he going to try the little dink? Would he slow down to kind of control it and look for a hop?
Well, when you're running at that speed, it would be very, very easy to just tap the ball and it goes dead.
Yeah, completely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to actually pick that ball up in mid-flight and to control it and get over the line.
And that's a skill that, like, you all try and do, even in training. I used to roll it and just run around, like, from 2 yards. I'm certainly not going at that speed, that's for sure. And it's bloody hard enough as it is, like, with a static ball, you know. So
we've seen one player do that over the years.
Draco versus the All Blacks.
He is probably the one guy over the years, like, with that low centre of gravity, that can move at that pace.
Oh, well said, Kev. That low centre. Perfect height for
what are you trying to say?
The tall lads find it hard to get down there. No, but still, to do it in, like, I wouldn't say the audacity to do it, but that confidence that he has to back his ability at that stage, the game kind of, that was a kind of nail in the coffin, but Still, it was a big moment, you know. And
it was. Pat, again, at the weekend, he was talking to Gary Ringrose and he asked him about the Jordan Lerma try.
Gary, at the very end of the game, they were all back in the dressing room, absolutely packed. Sean said there's nearly 50-odd lads in there as well. Who's standing up and speaking? Are you guys just kind of soaking it in, or is there a couple of lads standing up, laying it down again for next season?
No, I think we all kind of soaked it up, because to get us to there, that point, and to win it, was as a result of 55-plus players that have contributed to it. So if it wasn't for that group effort, we wouldn't have been there, we wouldn't win it. And the 23 guys that go out in the day are the lucky ones and have the responsibility of representing and backing up the work that other guys have done. So it was no individuals really, it was collective enjoyment.
And you've scored a few crackers yourself since you started playing as well, but what do you think when you're out there and Jordan Lerma goes out and does something like that?
He's a freak of nature. I don't know how he does it sometimes. It's pretty cool seeing him do that, because he works just as hard as in training, and then it comes into fruition in games. So it kind of reinforces the fact that if you work hard in training, that stuff like that can happen, and you can pull stuff off like that. So I don't find it too much of a surprise when you see the work he puts in and what he does in training. So it's reassuring from any player's point of view to see that.
Yeah, so freak of nature, Jordan Lerma. But it's true, like the really good players, the players who do the stuff in games, they're also trying stuff and practicing stuff in training, like crazy stuff that we don't get to see.
Yeah, and I think Lens have a nice mix now of X Factor and really solid. Like, you look at their centres, Henshaw and Ringrose are rock solid and always make the right decisions, do the right things. Then you got wingers like Lowe and Larimer that maybe aren't as solid and make the odd mistake every now and again, but make things happen in games. And I think, I think they have the confidence, and I think Lancaster and Leo give them the pass to try things.
It's something
that's really important.
It's something Lancaster's talked about, said that one of the things he feels he's added and has concentrated on is Leinster's ability when the game breaks down. Mm. When the game gets a little bit messy, are you good enough to take advantage of that? And when you've got players like Lowe and Larmer, they can take advantage of that.
Yeah, and the majority of the game is played after three or four structured phases. So I think they talk about the way they train is, you know, confident of playing in chaos. And I think they put the players in high fatigue, high pressure situations in training all the time, and just see how they respond. And guys like Larimer and Lowe are the type of guys you don't really want to be defended against when you're knackered. I think after kind of 15 plus phases, Leinster just looks so dangerous.
Exactly, and you have these players who, like, you look at other squads, say if you looked at Munster, and if they were playing against Racing for another 40 minutes, as we said before, they just, until Zeebo came on, they just didn't have any match winners or someone to take the game by the scruff of the neck at that stage. Well, if you look at Leinster at the moment, you kind of go, well, tries can come from everywhere. If they skew a kick, they've got, like, even Carberry coming on, and Carberry's break was another one.
That's, you know, the very thing I was going to bring up as soon as you said that, because Carberry comes into the game and he does something that actually no other fly half on that day could do.
But that's the quality that we're talking that Leinster have, and that ability to mix the kind of, you need your grafters, you need your guys in the cold face doing the hard yards, doing the hard work right up there, and like, without them, they can't express themselves or anything, you know. I think that you look at the quality that Leinster have, if there's a skewed kick, you see there's a lot of communication, I notice now as well, between Lowe and Rob Kearney, and even Johnny, like Colin, like, we'll go back short side, and yeah, like, if people make mistakes, they've players that can punish, and these are the small percentages at the top level that actually win you these titles, and they're so young as well, like, you know. Mm. You see these guys mid-20s, the future's good.
Well, that's an interesting point. So the future of Leinster here, the people have obviously and understandably got very, very excited. There's a core of players here who have won a Grand Slam with Ireland and a Champions Cup and Pro 14 double in the same season. You've got people like Larmer and Ryan who've come through. This is their first season. And when you talked earlier on about depth, Jimmy, this is really interesting, because these guys have come through towards the top of the pile, not just adding on the bottom, you know, and the bottom of a fairly high pile to begin with. We can't really expect this to happen again next year, but we're going to have some big losses out of this side. Richard Strauss is retiring. Fine, he's got a great career for Leinster and for Ireland as well. Issa retiring is huge, absolutely huge. So how they plug these holes will be really interesting. Will they go in for another non-Irish qualified player, for example? Like, what do you think they might do?
Yeah, they'll get I think they'll get another back to replace Issa. They need consistent senior back there all the time. And the problem is all their best talents with Ireland for those big so I think you'll see a signing coming.
So you mean this is someone who can again take a senior place if not captain for the Pro 14
the leader
games.
Role definitely
yeah role. Someone who's there all year round. Yeah. I think it's really important to have that stability and like have Scott Farty all year round in the pack, which is going to be huge for them.
But Leinster's choice of foreign player has always been someone who like is just oozes quality for starters, constantly around, but demands respect, but also drives standards. And you can, even after the game, I think Nisa or Issa, they were talking to him about retirement, and he was actually talking about the young lads. Mm. And again, it's that culture thing of not talking about himself. He was talking about how the young lads can drive on and go on from this and what they need to do and standards set now, and this is the kind of the minimum standard requirement. So they always sign quality foreign players. Like, and Felipe was one to kind of drive standards as well, you know, and he was like, I'm so passionate. And this is a guy who, like, okay, I've been at different clubs where foreigners come in or the foreign lads are in there and they'd be quality players, but they wouldn't have as much of an impact as, like, Leinster have to get this recruitment, all the rest of the provinces have to get it right, because rest of the clubs can sign 5, 6, 7 foreigners, makes a difference. Your ones have to be key.
The one concern Lancaster and Lee are going to have when they're sipping their pina coladas on the beach over the next few weeks is the Connacht game where they got pumped, and there was another game they lost at home to Treviso with pretty much the second string side, which is essentially going to be the side that's around for the, you know, September when the Australian international, or sorry, the internationals are away, and also with the World Cup period then the following year. And that will be a concern, that there was maybe a lack of leadership, and not necessarily lack of talent, but a lack of leadership for tough games. So I think Leo will be looking ahead now to August, September to say, how can we make sure that that never happens again? Because, you know, coaches will be critical on themselves, and they want to make sure that they have the ability to absorb those really tough international periods as a province. So,
A good sign for Leinster after the game when Stuart Lancaster was talking about reviewing that final, because it will hold on. My team just shipped 30 points. Mm. So when yous all come back, I'm not going to forget about that. That's a good sign. Hopefully he's not going anywhere.
I can't see it.
No.
Why would you?
Yeah, why would you? Exactly.
Exactly. Right. And we're going to switch tack now. There's something else happened this week. I'm going to go back to the Jonathan Sexton bit where he got angry. And you don't like Johnny when he's angry. The Scott Williams hit on him, followed by the James Davies piece. World Rugby brought out, or they announced, two trials going on in the under-20 tournaments. One involves a high tackle warning, and the second involves the nipple line, which is the great phrase. For anyone who hasn't seen this, essentially what they're trying to do is to go further from when they brought in the increased sanctions New Year's Day, I think last year, for high tackles. And they're saying, right, if you've gone in upright into a tackle, we want to stop that. We want to get people bent at the waist. There's a small bit of audio we have here from World Rugby. It's Ross Tucker describing what they're trying to do here.
We want tacklers to be bent at the waist. So at the Junior World Cup, or the Under-20 Championships, which will be in France now at the end of May, we will trial a post-match sanction where any high tackle penalty, any head injury to either player, any high tackle that was missed on the field but picked up after the match, and any head contact will be reviewed by a citing commissioner, and he will ask one question: is the tackler upright or bent at the waist? If the tackler is upright, he will receive a high tackle warning. If he's bent at the waist, no problem. He was in the safe position, and so we are happy with the decision on the field. If he's upright, high tackle warning, because that's the behaviour we want to move the player away from. And two high tackle warnings in the tournament will mean a one-match suspension. So we're hopeful that that message will come through to the coaches, because the moment those coaches now start seeing that their players are being sanctioned after the match for being upright, we want them to say, listen, from now on, be bent at the waist, make the tackle in the safer position. So that's the intention, and that'll be trialled at the under-20s coming up, and if it's successful, then we hope that we can apply that regulation elsewhere.
Okay, so that's what they're trying to do. And in terms of some further background, if we go again back to 2017, when they brought in the new increased high tackle sanctions, they didn't actually change the law, they just changed the sanctions. What they were again trying to do was to, from their perspective, to change player behaviour, and they're saying, look, that has worked to an extent, but not across all leagues. So there are differences, for example, in the yellow card to high tackle ratios across the different competitions. Overall, we are seeing more yellow cards for high tackles, which is what they want to see, but not across all leagues. They're bringing this in, saying a trial. Can we do this retrospectively to again promote a change? So we talked about this very briefly before we went, before we started recording. Going in upright is not going to be an easy change for some players. There's one that comes to my mind is Jonathan Sexton, but there are others who are happily to go into contact completely upright, and that's something which they're going to want to change.
It was quite interesting listening to Ross there talk about the coaches and how coaches are going to be, they're going to go back to coaches and say, well, this is what your players are doing. So to me, it goes back to technique and how they're actually coached and what they're doing on the field.
I think he was also getting an incentive. So if the coach is seeing his players getting suspended, he's going to go through them and say, "Lads, this isn't happening again."
But also, you've got to set your defensive coach has got to set your tone of how you're going to defend, what way you want to defend. I think you look at the way Ireland do things, to do a lot of that choke tackle. That's going to be interesting if they're going to try and still play that. How that's going to pan out, because I think you see Johnny, he stands up an awful lot in the way he tackles. He tries to hold up for and wait for back rows, not always, but some of the time. I just think it goes back to how you're coached, to be honest. And if you're used to dropping your hips and getting low and being able to kind of hit people, or if you're going low around the ankles, that's the way. If you're used to hitting up high and trying to be macho or whatever way you want to call it, it's going to be hard to change people's habits. So if you get it done, to me it goes back to kind of as early as you can go, but coaches do, something needs to be done, I agree, but I don't know what, it'd be interesting to see how strict and stringent they're going to be.
The retrospective nature is interesting though. So look, just leave it to after match. Leave the ref do what he's been doing and then we'll go back and review.
Yeah, there's enough for refs to have to keep an eye on, but I think it's an interesting idea. I think they have to try something, but I'm not convinced that it's the answer to trying to prevent concussions. Like, I think the hips and the knees are more dangerous when it comes to concussions.
You've mentioned that before.
Yeah, I just think like you get a lot of kind of hip, knee, elbow. Like that would have always, like I would have seen the majority of head knocks and particularly bad ones against Jimmy's hip once. Like, like people run hard and then you stick your head and you don't quite get the timing right and you catch the bone of the hip, the side of your head. And like, it's definitely not going to prevent anything there. I think head on head is probably less serious than getting a hip on the side of the head. But listen, I think they're at least trying things. And I think they have to continue to try things. And I think tackle technique is a big focus. And if nothing else, this forces teams to do more tackle technique. Then I think it's good.
But that's like in some clubs I've had that like, the defence coach will come in and he'll go, right, we're hitting too high this all week. What are we doing at the weekend? We'll have a review and it'll literally be tackle technique for most of the week then, you know, and kind of going, right, square up, drop your hips, get low. Like, and he'll pull aside the culprits, one of the coaches used to, and be one-to-one with them and go, right, like if you need to work on something and it's the same guys doing it the same time all the time, you go, right, there's obviously something wrong here. So, and the rest of it is, completely like technique, getting your head right. I found a lot of the younger players were kind of, their technique was all over the place in terms of like they're putting their head the wrong side instead of like, you're taught to tackle on your knees and get your head in behind the ass and stuff like that and use your legs to drive. Should they just throw themselves in front of people?
So like, you mean you've seen a difference over your career when you're playing in the young?
Yeah, but like this wasn't as prominent beforehand. Now it is. Okay, players are getting bigger. I completely agree with that. But
you're talking pure technique, putting your head where you shouldn't be putting your head.
Exactly. Yeah. And people, like, you see it a lot. Like, you know, and I understand there are times when it's going to happen and someone's going to step you. You can see it.
Things someone move quickly
exactly,
out there.
Exactly. Yeah. But some of the ones where you can be in complete control of, especially if you can see someone kind of running at an angle and they're not really going to change, and I think you can You can do that. Maybe Kev was just kind of struggling with that when he was trying to tackle me.
I
kind of ran one way, mate.
No, so. It was the Joey Carberry-esque like footwork right on the line that really threw me when I was tackling you. That was the only issue.
So that's trial one, and that's in the under 20 World Championship. But in the under 20 trophy, which is a different tournament, they're trying something which will change on the field. So this is the nipple line thing. So this would actually be changing the height of what a high tackle is. So the acceptable height of the tackle will be reduced from the line of the shoulders to the nipple line. Now, this has been trialed before, and essentially what you'd want on every jersey a line across.
Did you see in America, was it last year's America or US or whatever it's called, the rugby league over there, on their jerseys they had a strip across it.
Yeah. That's what you'd need.
Yeah, you have 100%. You need kind of a target line. Otherwise it's going to be so hard to manage. And you can, otherwise, if you have that line, you can say, right, Ruck, you're over.
It makes it more clear cut, because like there's a lot of tackles where you hit just like at the top of the chest, bottom of the shoulder, and you slide up and catch the chin and stuff. Yeah. And there has been some dangerous ones like that where it's very hard for the refs, because they're saying he started on the chest, but he slipped up and cracked your man's chin then.
And
technically that's legal, because the first point of contact's on the chest, because he wrapped the arm.
It used to be legal. And they've the view.
If you start on the chest and you wrap your arm and your shoulder catches the bottom of their chin and they get an awful knock from it, like for me that's legal like, at the moment.
But that's where the 2017 change. So if you've started there, but there was a likelihood of you then hitting the head,
okay,
it's your fault. Whereas before that, I've had conversations before about this, and particularly I will say with Southern Hemisphere rugby people who are very big in that first contact.
Mm.
You know, that first contact, if it's on the chest, then whatever happens after that, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things which I've done. But both of these, they're interesting approaches, I will say. It'd be very, very easy, we will help keep track of this, but it'd be worth watching, I think.
And they're taking a scientific approach. So Ross Tucker is one of the leading lights in sports science, and I think he's done he's crunched a lot of numbers around this, and he statistically thinks that this will make a big difference. So it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out.
That's Kitman Labs fishing for a contract with World Rugby.
Yeah, well, Ross is he spoke at a conference last year.
There you go.
That's how I know him. So
Kitman Labs conference.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, ding, ding, ding. Okay, we'll leave that there. We're going to take a look at some of your social media questions next.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney, he used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards. We're going to take a look at some of your social media questions now. Make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for the panel for next week. Actually, before we do social media, looking across the water, as they say. So Sarries beat Exeter. Well done, Sarries.
Yeah, convincing.
Well done, Mark McCall.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah, that's four for him, which ties Dean Richards, which is not bad.
Not bad at all, yeah.
Yeah. His record with Leicester. And then there was a little bit of news during the leave. Oh, yeah, sorry. Kev left, by the way. Kev decided that once he got his plug in, he was just going to leave.
He was happy. He cashed in and he was gone at the gap.
Yeah.
Standard Kev, leaves early.
Very standard. Ruaidhrí Pienaar, possibly returning to Ulster as a coach.
That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Isn't it?
I watched him playing for Montpellier during the week, and again, like
he's still got
still controls things, still the kind of maestro around there, and it's a huge if you're an Ulster supporter watching that, it's gonna frustrate you, isn't it, the IRFU rules on things.
But hold on, John Cooney.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, but I'm talking even push him to 10, like, you know, you can still control the game. You still need that, like we mentioned earlier on about Issa and the influence that he's had. Ruins had that up in Ulster, but if rumours are correct, not always true, but It would be a nice coup for the province to get kind of back in the good books of everything. And
PR-wise, it would be fantastic. 100%. I know sometimes we talk about PR and all this, but like there is a guy who would be beloved if he could return.
There's a guy who, if he came back, would have more headlines than the appointment of Dan McFarlane as head coach. You know, and I know there's even some interesting stuff with Jarrod Payne. There's no announcement yet on what he's doing in terms of playing or not, because I know he's been doing the defence. So again, you're kind of having these players there. If he can come back and they can work something, I don't know. But if he does, I think it'd be obviously a seamless transition.
Yeah. And also in the coaching rumour mill, we had Bernard Jackman in with it last week. And it's Sean Edwards looks as if he might be hooking up with him.
Yeah, seems to have him in for a day or two a week or something like that. Myself and Kev were talking about it before. We said it used to be, I think Andy Farrell did it in Munster when...
Well, that's when he was, I think, contractually not allowed to step on a field.
Yes, yeah, okay, but he was available one day a week or whatever to assist with the transition of Erasmus leaving and or Niebner. And to have your national coach as a no matter what position, be it a scrum coach, be it attack coach, to be involved is going to give confidence to those players, to those Dragon players, and what Bernard's trying to do at the Dragons and try and get as many Welsh players involved with that Welsh side. You know, I think it's a small little coup. You know, it's nice.
The Welsh Union owned Dragons, so you can imagine that might have played into this.
Yeah, of course, but I still think he could say, oh, I'm busy, I'm whatever, I'm doing something. He could kick it down the road, but that can be just for those players, can give them that little boost. And I think defence is a big area for the Dragons. So.
No, it's good. First question is from Shane Madigan. Munster, two semi-finals this year seems okay, but needed a last-minute sensational try to beat Toulon at home and hammered by Racing in the semi, who lost to Cast yesterday, and hammered by a Leinster semi-B team. That's probably a bit strong in the Pro 14. With Byrne the only notable signing. So this... actually, technically, Shane, this isn't a question, but what he's getting at is how do Munster kick on from here? Is this actually as good a season as it might have seemed on the surface? And when you consider the coaching transition that they went through, that's actually not a bad result.
No, I was just about to say that. I was going to say, when you lose your head coach halfway during the season, and that's going to have a lot of disruption, you know, and a few injuries, few off-field stuff as well, and like all these things take toll, and people don't think they're much, but sometimes they do. And if you'd taken Munster at the start of the year and said you'd have two semi-finals, they'd probably chop your hand off for it, to be honest, you know. And I do think they can kick on. I think one or two more players in can really make it a stronger year next year. What position? Don't know.
Can they sign more South Africans?
Yeah, well, that's... I honestly, personally, I hope they don't go down that route.
Well, they have in the academy.
Yeah, I know. I know. I get frustrated about it. You can kind of associate a province with a kind of nearly a nation. So you look at Ulster, and Ulster would invariably sign South African players. Leinster would normally go the line of the odd Aussies more so, I think, would have been more so, if memory serves correctly, and the odd Kiwi as well. And initially it was Aussies and New Zealanders in Munster. And look at the quality that they used to get in, and now we're just signing players kind of like offhand, and I get frustrated by that they sign in so many players. One, you're stopping younger lads coming through. Not always. Look, if their quality's there, they should be there, agree. But I just think that there's so many. You don't need that many. You can have a couple in, and they buy into the whole culture. But then you're diluting it a bit too much, I think.
Okay. Continuing the Munster theme, this is from Darren Doheny. Will Simon Zeebo go down as the most underrated player in Ireland? And why do people outside of Munster not value him like we do down south?
From a Leinster supporter?
Well, no, hold on. So no, it's definitely from a Munster fan, right? So, but in your shoes, you're Dubliner born and bred, but played proudly for Munster.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see both sides of that? Or what do you think? Is he underrated?
I don't think he's underrated.
Oh.
I think everyone knows he's a match winner. He has that X factor. He can do things that like a lot of people don't do. It'd be interesting to see if he was an Leinster, how people would hold him in regard. I can see that point, but I think Zeebo is a man unto himself. He's his own entity. He will do whatever he wants to do, and he loves doing it for Munster. You can see that. He would never go anywhere else in Ireland, 100%, but I don't think he's underrated at all. I just think that Joe has, if that's what he's talking about, he doesn't get the recognition that maybe he deserves. I think that Joe just has a different way of doing things, and he doesn't fit into his game plan. He finds himself that there's enough game breakers, match winners in his squad already, so there's no need for one more. And look, it's up to Simon now to kind of kick on again and do well in France. And I'll tell you what, next year is going to be some interesting rugby played with him and Teddy Thomas in that back three.
It will be at times, yeah.
Frustrating. I'll be going to hope they zoom in on Dunnock Ryan when there's a few little faux pas going on.
In terms of the valuing of Zeebo by people outside Munster, what I'd say is there's probably a bit of this. When you're a fan of a team, you will be very, very loyal to the players you've seen come up, and you will ignore some of the flaws as well. And that works the other way as well. When you don't see them every week, you might see the flaws without seeing all the good stuff that they bring, you know, and that's kind of natural. But yeah, see, Planet Zeebs, interesting place.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. From Bojangles Gavigan, with that's definitely a real name. Okay,
Alan McNan, I think.
With his drop goal winner against France, coupled with a Grand Slam, Champions Cup, and Pro 14 title, surely Johnny Sexton is odds on to win World Player of the Year, or will they just end up giving it to McCaw again? Nice.
Nice little twist there at the end. Yeah. Johnny's been sensational, hasn't he? He's definitely got to be up there. Whether he gets it or not, I don't know. What month are they choosing that? Are they going to give Bowden Barrett enough time to kind of
to catch up,
to stake a claim,
to do something?
Yeah, he's been tipping away, hasn't he, down in Super Rugby? But yeah, it'd be interesting if Bowden produces one or two games. I think in who they play in France anyway. You can kind of see him. They do like to favour it, but regardless. I know, I think it goes back to what you've kind of said about Zeebo, that kind of love is blind but the neighbours ain't, kind of that we've all, like, we love Johnny so much up here that, like, I think he's underrated. I think, like, outside of here, I think everything he does, because he's so quiet, and Kev mentioned it as well, about he just gets on with it, doesn't he?
Well, unless you're a Scarlett player, he wasn't very quiet with them.
No, true, but I mean, off the field, like, you know, he's just kind of, he's subdued. On the field, he's not, but he's quiet and he goes about his business. He loves what he does, and look, I'd love to see him win it. I hope he does. It'd be no more fitting to a guy, but again, if he did win it, you know exactly what he'd say. He'd be like, I wouldn't be here without my team, and which is the culture that we're in at the moment.
Okay, and I'd be interested to see that. He's had an extraordinary year. He's been absolutely brilliant. I have to say, it's been great to watch. Yeah. There was a couple of moments even in that match alone that were just fantastic to be there. The kick over Evans after the high tackle penalty. Mm. Jesus, that was gorgeous.
I know we actually didn't mention it when we were talking about the game, but and he mentioned it in his kind of little interview about the kicking as well. Like, you know, just as a player on the field, when a 10 can just put it in the corner, and I was lucky enough where, like, I've played against Rog when he was doing it and Johnny when he was doing it, and it breaks you as a defender when he just put it over the corner and it just skips into touch just beside the five, and you're like, oh, and they didn't have to do anything to get there. It's just that skill for Johnny to do that at the weekend, and even James Lowe when he had his kick.
James Lowe's one was he had time and he just said, oh, I'm gonna do this.
Oh, it's a perfect golf shot. Kev called it a punch, so he went for a seven. I went for a little pitching wedge, but it was just like, but those kicks are just like, if it goes the other way, it's just the head goes, but everything's going your way, and it can just gets that momentum going again. And when you have someone like Johnny who can just pin corners, it's just got to frustrate the hell out of you.
Can I be super critical?
Sure, go on.
Johnny's place kicking's off.
Yeah, but okay. Yeah, I was thinking that coming in today.
As in the way he's, and I don't care if he's getting them or not. There was one kick he got that it was the luck of the gods that it actually went over. It just looked and felt and sounded all wrong.
But I don't think he's been striking it that well all year, really. Like, he hasn't had... Like, we're talking a lot about his kicking, and before, in Six Nations, we're talking about his had an injury and whoever else is going to step up to kick. And obviously, Issa had stepped up to kick previously. And yeah, I just... But it, look, it's a testament to the guy that when his... As a 10, as a main kicker, when your kicking's off, it can have a huge impact on your game on, outside of that. And it's a testament to him that it has no... If not, it makes him more determined to do something else.
Get some more 5 points.
Exactly. I can't contribute this way, so... But it is, I wouldn't say the fear, but it's just that... I guess it's kind of there, isn't it? I'm sure there's going to be other... Like, Conor Murray's going to be there. I'm sure there's going to be a few other lads practicing their kids.
I would like that. I'm always in favour of having multiple players in a team who can step up to kick a ball. It gives a coach a lot more options.
Oh, completely. And a left footer, and like small little things like that can change an awful lot. You can manipulate the field an awful lot better with a left and right footer in your back line.
So Luke McGrath and Gary Ringrose, keep your kicking practice up if you can. Okay, we'll end it there. Thanks to James and Kev. I hope you're part-time well on the road, Kev. Yeah. To Alan McMahon for producing, and Paul Donegan and Dermot Cronin were on production. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards on Sports Joe. Brought to you by Innocent Super Smoothies. On the bright side.
To the short side.
Before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi Rob, Zeeb here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ringrose comes through.
Oh,
that is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score!